Hello, this is James Grunvig with Decentralized.media on Unrestricted Warfare. I'm bringing on returning guest Rich Germeau, who will be my repeat guest every week for foreseeable future as we dive into different subjects. Yes, we're going to get to Sasquatch eventually, but today we're talking about the law enforcement trap, because it is a trap not only for what he went through in his career working inside law enforcement, but it's a trap for all Americans. And it's kind of like why we're fighting censorship too. They, you know, the globalists want to control the people. They want to control it through law enforcement. They want to control it through a military police state eventually, through surveillance. And certainly they want to control censorship, which means show like mine on Unrestricted Warfare on Decentralized Media, they want to shut us down completely. This is the war. We're in an information war. We're in a spiritual war. And yeah, a kinetic war, a hot war is coming. That part of it, of World War III, is coming very soon. And let me play the first video, because NATO's promising us something. Conflict's supposed to get hotter. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let's hear from the NATO chief.
You need to have water. You need to have a radio on batteries, and you need to have a flashlight on batteries to make sure that you can survive the first 36 hours. Things like that. That's simple things. But it starts there. The realization that not everything is plannable, not everything is going to be hunky-dory in the next 20 years. I'm not saying it is going wrong tomorrow, but we have to realize it's not a given that we are in peace. And that's why we have the plans. That's why we are preparing for a conflict with Russia and the terror groups. If it comes to it, if they attack us, we're not seeking any conflict. But if they attack us, we have to be ready.
I guess NATO commander says, get your batteries, get your food supply. I guess they're preparing their citizens in Europe for a conflict with Russia or some terror groups or something. So, yeah, get prepared. No peace. We're getting ready for a big conflict. So, okay, guys, get your.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to agree with that citizen reporter. His observation is crystal clear to me. We're definitely going into conflict with Russia. I mean, even Macron has said we're going to send French troops to Ukraine. Putin says you send any Western troops into Ukraine, American troops, German, French, Polish. World War III will begin. And Russia has been a military economy for the last two plus years, working around the clock, replenishing all their missiles, building new tanks. They're just continuously doing it. And in fact, Polish jets were launched yesterday. There was some bombing going on inside Ukraine by Russian jets. So we're going to go to a hot flash point, a trigger fuse that's going to really go. And right, he's not talking about hunky-dory 20 years, a NATO guy, or something in the future. He's talking about this year. This is predictive programming. This is right in your face. They're telling you, get ready. Rich, what are your observations from that video?
Well, I think that what he meant to say was when they attack themselves to start this hot face thing. And a massive, large conflict is absolutely necessary for them to help them to facilitate what they want to attempt to do and to try to maintain control. And I think it's important to realize that they have to try to occupy Russia in Europe in this Russian alliance. I think this Russian alliance will probably start to show its head if this does kick off in Europe when it does, because, you know, they need to have more than one front going on at one time. Right. So, I mean, the Middle East is an extremely important region and territory for them to try to maintain control over if they want to maintain the deep state, just because of oil, more or less.
Right. And then we got U.S. Troops near the Chinese border, not the Taiwan border, the Chinese border, like inside the international territory, just 12 miles offshore of your geographical border. So U.S. is like 6 miles away or something ridiculously close. So now China is, I expect, if Russia and NATO go to war, I expect China to invade Taiwan. I mean, that's how I'm looking at it.
Absolutely. You know, and honestly, too, I think that Russia has, I guess you could say, a secret weapon. at
A
least from
couple of them.
what my investigations have revealed, that I think that there's some unseen technological advantages that exist that I think we saw some evidence of it in like 2015 early. It was probably an alliance with them in it that did it, but I mean, we don't have to talk about that right now either.
We're gonna stick mostly to domestic law enforcement, but this Arkansas story, Hillary, the Clintons, is just kind of the body bag, right? The Clinton body bag count or the body count just kind of never goes away, and it's like it's just
No.
amazing. It's amazing, but here we go.
Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport executive Brian Malinowski is currently on life support after a wild shootout with ATF at 6 o'clock this morning, where one ATF agent had non-life-threatening gunshot wounds. But the brother of Malinowski is stating that his brother is currently on life support and the doctors are not going to do any surgery on him because they anticipate that he's not going to make it. ATF had showed up at his house this morning to serve a search warrant. That's the first red flag. His brother is asking why they didn't just serve him the search warrant at work. The second thing is that they are reporting that the ATF just kicked in the door and stormed the house as if it were swatted, which then his brother responded, which resulted in the firefight. Brother had stated that he was an avid collector of firearms and other weapons as well as coins and lived in an upper middle class suburb and earned about $253,000 a year. Because of that and his pretty ho-hum lifestyle, he could not fathom his brother being in anything illegal. He had far too much to lose. A public record search of Brian Malinowski showed no arrests other than run-ins with or other run-ins with police. They saw firefighters carrying circular saws, crowbars, and other tools into the house after the incident. A week before all of this had happened, apparently Malinowski had met with senators out in Arkansas to talk about the dealings of the airport. And police are currently still investigating the case and kind of what happened, but his brother is like, something isn't right. Malinowski is responsible for the administration, operations, maintenance, and development of the airport, which belongs and is named after Bill and Hillary Clinton. And many people are asking, and I have to too, I wonder what his ties were with Boeing. More to come.
So there we got a tie-in with Boeing. Let me, for the audience, so what is the Arkansas? So Arkansas is dying at the hands of the Clintons, right? And then there's a Clinton body bag where more than 60 people, 60, have died in bizarre ways. And everything's been written off as a suicide, and except in the case of Ron Brown, right? He was working inside the Clinton first term. And the theory goes that a plane crash in Serbia, I believe, during the Bosnia-Serbia war, that killed Ron Brown, but killed also 180 other innocent passengers and flight members. But they, the cabal does not care, right? So they will crash a plane to kill one person. They will crash a plane to kill four patent holders with Jacob Rothschild and 370. They do this. This is just bizarre. But you also go to Vincent Foster, Whitewater, back in the early 90s, and he was supposedly banging Hillary Clinton in the Lincoln bedroom in the White House, right? I know that for a fact. I've heard from insiders that listened to the tapes, not me, but they did. Take a step further, Seth Rich, how does he shoot himself in the back? And he wasn't even dead going to hospital. And then somehow he dies in the hospital, right? He was going to survive his non-life-threatening injuries of a gunshot wound to his back by MS-13 gang members, which probably were FBI related, which probably was connected to Hillary Clinton, right? Because he's the one that took the data, not a Russian hack from the DNC. And so they had to off him, and they did. So here's yet another case of an Arkansas, but this time it's weird because this Arkansas isn't around the globe or in Washington. It's actually inside Arkansas. And this woman reporter makes one comment. Boeing Airports. Did he know something? I don't know. I need to do some research on it. But Rich, jump on Boeing for a second because they've been in the news the last couple of weeks. Go ahead.
Boeing. Okay, so that whistleblower ended up dead, right? In his, what was it, in his car or his hotel room officially? What did they say? Obviously we talked about Boeing last week some, and it's crystal clear, what has been going on over the past several years with them. I mean, obviously, to me, it looks like an inside type job to basically dematerialize the company to bankrupt it on purpose to go out of business in one way or another. Maybe it is like what happened to UPS, you know, where they all of a sudden settled this huge contract with their employees, gave them everything they wanted, and then right afterwards they announced they were going to cut loose half of the people and restructure and usher in robotics, you know. So
Yep.
another thing, you know, related to this that I saw, okay, this is a sideshow circus. I mean, more or less, it's a clown show right in your face. And something I picked up on that first video was related to the fire department going in there with crowbars and stuff.
Yeah.
I know what that means because, and from my law enforcement experience, it means that they were going there to break into a safe. You take crowbars into a house and sledgehammers, it means you're going to break into a safe.
Right. And then he probably had documents there,
Sure.
and so that's separate. He's not going to keep guns in the safe, he maybe a collectible, but at the end of the day, the guns are stored elsewhere in the house, right? He was a collector of guns. So got it. But you're right. The crowbars and skill saws and stuff. I'm agreeing with you. A safe is a break-in. Great observation. Very good. All right. Let's get into the PowerPoint and, Rich's law enforcement background, because really this is what the show is about. We got to continue to peel back the onion layers on the FBI, on how the police and sheriffs work in this country. And I think Rich knows something about that to a great degree. Babylon Matrix, Law Enforcement Trap, Episode 60 with Rich Germo on Unrestricted Warfare. You can find yours truly, Unrestricted Warfare, on rumble.com. Red Pill Project will be launching decentralized media soon enough. Coming soon. First topic. So they want to censor the world. Everything ties in together, Rich. Everything ties in. Right? The child sex trafficking, they don't want people, citizen reporters anymore, breaking down stories on Boeing or the Clintons or anything. They want to censor us. And it's not just in the United States. This is a worldwide operation. So to me, it's no different than the lockstep of, everyone's got to get mandated masks, vaccines, and so on. We're dealing now, the 2024 version of all of those mandates. Now they want to globally censor us. And in fact, the World Economic Forum told us at the beginning of January, what they tell us, disinformation, misinformation is the biggest threat to their worldwide control. So they need to censor us. Rich, what are your thoughts on the damage and challenges of censorship?
Oh, well, obviously it's the first signal that or the first manifestation that you certainly aren't in a democratic, you know, system or any type of a free system at all when you have to censor or take away people's ability to speak freely and to communicate with each other and to share, I guess you could say, intelligence related to their environment.
I'm with you on that. It's a threat. This is interesting. This is sort of like in our face. It's all about the predictive programming. World's population to fall for the first time since the Black Death. Well, this was always the plan of the globalists. Transhumanism was the main plan for the survivors, but they were going to definitely kill the old people like they were doing. So it wasn't just vaccines in 2020. They were doing it with forced ventilation and forced remdesivir, right? And hospice drugs in order to kill the elderly. Why are they killing the elderly? Because the elderly remember things. They remember World War II. They remember how life was for the last 100 years, right? Stories, connections, all of that. They're the storytellers. Well, if you wipe out the elderly, you're not going to have, then they can go erase history. And this ties into the censorship. So I find this a very interesting thing. And they like to scare people. So, of course, world population falling for the first time with Black Death. For the people that don't really know anything, it is a big wow. Rich, you got any thoughts on this?
You know, like you said, his story. I mean, only the winners write history. I mean, I think we've been through this probably multiple times in the history of humanity. Probably every couple hundred years, we have to go through something like this because the people get to a point collectively where they start to wake up just naturally, where they start to see the holes in things and they start to ask questions that lead to answers that can't be given. So, you have to keep the people stupid and to keep them from getting to the point where they wake up and realize what's going on. So, I mean, call what we're going through now a great reset, because that's what it is. It's an event where they're going to depopulate. They're going to reset history again and start over again, right? So I think that we've been through this many times, probably about every couple hundred years, something
Well, I think the
similar to
Matrix
this.
said it, the movie Matrix said it right. The second one, the architect, when Neo met the architect, he said, "You're the seventh version, Neo," meaning we've gone through seven resets. So I think we're in reset number seven. So that's what I think. They're literally telling us. Well, this is interesting because Obama went over to bloody England, we're told, and yet we have a Photoshop of Obama having one, a right hand that's smaller and a white hand and his black hand on the left. Wow, that's a really bad Photoshop. I guess they're doing this on purpose. I mean, so is Obama even alive? Is Obama, has he not been dealt with? We did see him outside 10 Downing, which is the British government, parliament or whatever, for the prime minister. And here we got this really bad Photoshop. This is worse than Kate Middleton, by the way. Rich, any comments on this ridiculous picture that was posted?
I mean, there's a reason why Q said what he did and said these people are stupid. I
Yeah.
mean, they're sending messages, to each other, by their symbolism and the things that they do. And it could it be Obama? He may or may not be gone,
No, correct. But that's clearly not him in that picture. Just because
Doesn't
they
look like
photoshopped his
him.
head on and they gave him one left black hand and one smaller white hand. It was just like bizarre. But here it is.
Well, it's all in your face.
It totally in our face. Oh, this is one of the subjects we're talking about, the FBI. So the FBI, I just learned this morning, has had a program, or still has a program, called Confidential Human Sources, or Human Assets Program. That is what it's called. So it was investigated back in 2022, and this commentary from the Tennessee Star says it's really time to look in deeper. I guess that's going to happen a little bit later on. And I found a 54-page document. The Attorney General's guidelines regarding the use of FBI confidential human sources or assets. Purpose and scope, which I'm going to show you. C is prohibition of it, right? So there's got some guidelines or guide rails or guardrails to keep the FBI supposedly within certain behavior, certain restrictions, right? We go into the second one. We have validation of confidential human source. They explain things in this 54-page document. And then, boom, purpose and scope. So let me read the purpose and scope. The purpose of these guidelines is to set policy for all Department of Justice personnel regarding the use of all confidential human sources as further defined below that are operated by the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, in any FBI investigative program or other authorized information collection activities. You got any comment on this, Rich?
They use all kinds of sources like the CIs, criminal informants, these sources, whatnot. These are all predominantly paid too. They're paying these people for
Yep.
information or to be moles or whatever it is. I mean, I had some experience with some very suspicious, I guess, players when I was in law enforcement. That one guy in particular that was a meth addict, HIV. Hepatitis positive, fifth degree black belt. I mean, this guy's like 6'1" and 230 pounds. He looks healthy, but he was a paid informant by the FBI related to PETA issues. And he kept, floating this thing when we go to these crazy calls at his house where he would try to ambush us and whatnot. And this guy was a felon. He had guns and whatnot, and different things. And nothing would ever happen to him. He would get off. I called the FBI just to confirm or to, validate his story of being an informant. They confirmed to me that he was. And I asked him, I was like, well, why would you have a guy like this and use him as a credible informant related to criminal investigations and whatnot? And they hem and hawed and didn't really have a good answer. But I mean, to me, what I saw is okay, it was a validation to me of what I knew at that time. And this would have been back probably in 2005, six, seven, possibly, where these are the kind of people that they use for these false flag incidents, these heavily compromised individuals, they're drug addicts, they're involved in compromising situations regularly, and they can at any time that they want, use these guys as patsies. They already got them on the payroll. They know everything about them, so they keep these people hanging around.
Yeah, and if they got leverage on them by like blackmail leverage, like they know
Sure.
something bad about these people, they can put them in jail anytime. The patsies play along. This is how that program works.
Sure.
Let's get into a little bit about your history in law enforcement, your dealings with issues in the county up in Olympic Peninsula up in Washington State, and your issues with dealing with the FBI. Take wherever you leave it. Go ahead.
I was thinking about this a lot, talking about this, because I haven't really publicly, disclosed this stuff. I have, on internet forums, on social media and whatnot, talked about some of it. And it's kind of scary, to be honest with you, to get into this in detailed. And there's some liability involved with it. These people are powerful to a degree. They control everything at this point, at least what we see. And I want to say that cops are just regular people. They got all the same moral and ethical flaws that the regular population does. And I'll say that they're not the cause of all these problems either. I think that what they are, they're cogging in the machine. They are a sector of this thing. They're part of the administration of this fractional reserve banking system, and this Babylon system, like you said. They're not the cause of the problem. They're just a symptom of the problem, a part of the administration of the
They're
problem.
trapped or caught in the problem.
Sure. I guess I'll start out by saying, I got into law enforcement in 1998. I had just gotten out of boot camp. I just turned 21 years old. I went to work for the Department of Defense as a security police officer, where we guarded gates, we rattled door handles, and then we enforced, misdemeanor crimes and stuff on the military installation, which was a naval station. I worked there for about 1 year, a little more than that, and then I went to work for the city of Forks. I got hired as a police officer, but they brought me in to work temporarily in their jail dispatch center. And really, that was my first exposure, I guess you could say, to corruption. And mostly it was because of the arrogance of the people, I guess, how they just kind of told how things were. And I could tell that if you want me to, because that's kind of a pinnacle part of it that was
No,
related to the chief of police
I
there.
think human flaws, like you said, the police are actually one of us. We all have flaws. Egos drive things, right? And then people put in power think they have absolute power. That's not always true, right? They're supposed to enforce laws and things of that
Absolutely.
nature. And so sometimes they enforce or selective enforcement, I should say, people they like, people they don't like, right? And so you see this all the time. But go ahead and talk about that.
Okay, well, this is kind of important because this was the chief of police of Forks, and he was brought in that position kind of like as a house cleaner, because the previous chief of police got addicted to prescription drugs. His life spiraled out of control. They didn't have leadership. Things went crazy. And then they kind of wanted to get rid of everybody and start clean. So they hired this house cleaner to come in who was not ethical or moral in any way, and he was arrogant. And he would just outright tell you, I mean, this is a married guy. He was working out there remotely and would go back and forth to his home, which was over in the Puget Sound area. And he wanted to brag about, his power and everything like that. And he was really just open with stuff that was not really that appropriate, but maybe he thought I thought it would be cool because he would openly talk about, the women he was messing around with when he was over here. And, we would be watching the cameras like, yeah, her and, blah, blah, blah. But one day, he sat me down in his office and we were talking about potentially that once I started out on patrol, that they would move me into working in the schools. Right, because I looked really young when I was 21. I looked like I could be in high school, right? So, but he was telling me, yeah, but you can't mess around with any of the girls. Well, I'm not like that anyways, and I wouldn't do that, but obviously it's kind of common. But one of the things that he told me though was this, is that he told me that it was very important that if you have people that make mistakes and that do things that are bad, like employees, that it's a valuable tool to be able to cover for them, and then you get ownership over them and they can never tell you no. So it's an important part of it to have compromised individuals underneath you that you can have take care of things for you. Right. So that
Leverage.
was my first exposure to that. And I was pretty shocked, that this guy would openly tell me that this is how law enforcement works. This is how you need to organize a department or administration so you have these tools available to you to be able to do things that are on the gray side or the dark side, I mean, to facilitate your mission, right? So, and I can tell you that every place that I ever worked, this was a consistent reoccurring thing, right? It wasn't just any one place. I mean, there were different degrees and levels of it, but this was how things operated, right? And after Forks, I went to work for the LaPush Police Department, which was a tribal agency, and I stayed there for a few years. And it was the same game. We would have these big events that would go down, like festivals and whatnot, and there would be a list of names on the whiteboard of all the people with like warrants that you couldn't arrest when they were there,
Got it.
right? Like if we were going to do a search warrant for drugs, you could look out the window of the police station and like an hour before we were going to serve, because when you did a warrant, you'd have to get a judge to sign it first. You'd have to go through the prosecutor and the chief of police. Well, somebody's making phone calls to all the drug dealers and telling them that there was going to be a warrant somewhere, and you seen everybody running around throwing all their stuff in dumpsters or taking off and going other places, right? So, I mean, I don't have any problem with the people or anything like that. I'm just like trying to paint a picture of how everything operates, right?
Correct.
So I went from there, LaPush. I worked for the city of Newport in Eastern Washington, stayed there for a year. It was the same thing, ethical, moral stuff, more or less. I ended up working at Mason County, which is in Western Washington. I stayed there for the remainder of my career. My full career went for almost 15 years. It was a little bit short of that. And ultimately it was a repetition of this, and it got to be to a point where I really just couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't be part of it anymore. I was incredibly bored with the job after a certain amount of time, to be honest, because I kept trying to do new stuff like detectives patrol. And the truth is, it's just a repetition of the same stuff over and over again. And you're dealing with the same players. And the truth is, too, is that you're dealing with all these people on the worst day of their lives, right? And you're continually doing that every day, day on and day out, right? To where.
And that part of it's a drag, and then you have the moral decay inside the police departments. And then you have guys just looking to check out retirement and get their pensions, right? To a degree.
It is. I mean, more or less, I guess you could say that. This is the way things are. It's an ends justifies the means type of a situation where image and civil liability are the most important aspects of it, right? And what I learned is that all resources will be used to protect image and civil liability at pretty much any cost.
And then and then you go into courts of law, do you, as a witness to certain crimes and things, or?
Sure. I mean, I didn't end up being in court too much because I wrote really good reports. So, generally speaking, most of my cases were plea bargains, or people were just pleading to the cases for the most part.
Because you nailed them. That's interesting. So when did you start to realize the FBI's role in law enforcement nationwide?
Well, I kind of knew that from the beginning when I worked for the tribe, because the tribe only has partial jurisdiction, right? They don't have jurisdiction over felony crimes. They don't have jurisdiction over non-tribal members that are on the reservation. And so the FBI is the one who has the jurisdiction over these felony type crimes that occur in these places. So I got to see, that you could barely get the FBI down there. And when we would apprise them of stuff, they would come and do certain investigations sometimes, but they were just trying to get through it and out of it with doing a minimal thing and moving on to something else, but it wasn't really, until I mean, I found lots of stuff when I worked for the tribe related to the connection between the states, the FBI, and different things. But that was just me building up my own, understanding, I guess you could say, of how things worked. I mean,
Sure.
because this is a body of work over a long period of time where I'm taking in stuff, I'm seeing stuff, how it really works, I'm observing it, and it's kind of an ugly picture, to be honest. And so in Mason County, it's the same stuff going on there that went on everywhere else. And the stuff that I was a whistleblower for was pretty small time. These are like integrity crimes,
Yep.
truthfulness, fraud, stuff like that to a degree. We had knowledge of other things, but no power or ability to do the types of searches and gathering of types of evidence that we could get to a higher level related to it. We just had knowledge of it, but we weren't able to do anything about it. But what we were able to, do this, it was me and two other guys that were whistleblowers. So we basically wrote this investigation out over like a year or a little longer, where it was related to a personnel issue. And I can tell you that basically they didn't like this guy anymore. He had been a confidant for a long time. He was kind of high up, a real smart guy.
Yep.
They used to use him to do stuff that was, like I explained before, when you have the compromised people, they're a useful tool. And then he kind of turned on him. So the next time he did something stupid, they went after him with both barrels, right? And used it as a process to try to get rid of him. And in doing so, there was, evidence destroyed, false evidence provided. These are my allegations, right? And I ended up, as part of this, the Washington State Patrol got involved in it because the agency hired them to do an independent investigation into this thing. And I had to get interviewed as part of that because I was involved in this thing. So I had to go meet with these two internal affairs guys from State Patrol at the State Patrol Academy, where I sat down with a tape recorder and I had to be asked a bunch of questions. Well, what they didn't know is that I had prepared a probable cause statement related to all of the allegations and the probable cause that we had found related to all the stuff I told you before. And right in the middle of that interview, I said, I got to read something on this tape. So I pulled it out of my pocket and I proceeded to read a probable cause statement to incriminate my bosses and a bunch of my coworkers. So they were pretty shocked. I was scared shitless when I did it, right? And then they told me afterwards, oh, you did the right thing and all this stuff. And okay. So I kept the point of contact was a sergeant at that time at the State Patrol, and I kept calling him to find out what was going to happen. Well, ultimately, what happened is he got promoted to being a lieutenant, and then he just said that things weren't as they appeared. Things weren't aren't as they appear. Right. So then I knew.
Which means they weren't going to investigate at all.
Yeah, pretty much. So then I realized that, and so we kept pushing it. We went to we went to kind of in the chain of this thing and went to our prosecutor's office first and reported it all to them. And they just kind of sat on it. They didn't do anything. And we kept talking with them back and forth and find out what was going on. And ultimately, I ended up hiring a couple lawyers. One guy helped facilitate some Public Records Act stuff for me, filed a couple of lawsuits related to that. One of them was that. One of them was something else, related to another fraud thing.
Anything come
But
out of it, out of the lawsuits?
yeah, there was a settlement for one of the cases that paid the legal fees, and then was supposed to help to fund the other case. And in the agreement with that was we weren't going to pursue it anymore or talk about it. And so I'm probably not going to talk about that. It's related to civil service.
Yeah, but you don't really need to. But the bigger picture, I think, is you're awakening that the FBI controls even the local county sheriffs. Is that kind of accurate?
Well, they control it all, but yeah, so I'll get into that. So ultimately, through this is I end up during this process launching a political campaign. So I ran for sheriff against my boss, and I didn't do it to win an election. I did it as a weaponization, I guess you could say, because the only way that I could speak freely to the public, because I felt obligated, to inform the public of these things, because at that time, this was 2009, 10, they were completely unaware generally of any of this stuff. They didn't know any of the stuff that was going on. And I thought that, I started to realize that this is a bad situation that we're in as a whole. This is all completely compromised, right? And the people are compromised, the system's compromised, all of it. And the people need to be informed about this. They need to know what's going on. Even if they don't have the context or the baseline to believe it or understand it, they need to hear from somebody that's a credible person that that the public had hired to represent and protect them. It's also my obligation to inform them if stuff has gone awry or if things are not as they appear or if there is danger, because I realize that this is a dangerous situation for the public to be in, right? In fact, later on, I would come to realize that this was a life and death type situation. So I ran this political campaign to inform, I guess, blow the whistle to the public. And it got to a certain point where I got to in contact with the White Collar Crime Division of the FBI out of Seattle.
Wow.
So I started talking with the supervisor regularly. And this was not an easy process, right? They were extremely reluctant. They didn't want to get involved in anything like this type of thing. So it got to a certain point where my lawyers actually talked to him and told him that, yeah, there's, fraud to the public. The people have been defrauded. There needs to be some accountability into this situation. And then finally, she agreed, that they would at least meet with me. Right. So there were certain terms to this that were negotiated between me and her. And part of it was that the Olympia FBI office, and especially the lead special investigator that was there, they couldn't be involved in this because they had a massive conflict of interest. These guys are golf playing buddies, with the people that we're reporting against. They're good friends. And she agreed totally that they wouldn't be involved. So about a week goes by. I happened to be in Tacoma that day with another guy helping him on some type of case. And I can't remember what. And I got a phone call. And it happened to be from the lead investigator from the Olympia office, specifically the guy that was supposed to be outside of this thing and not involved because of a conflict. And he told me that you got a meeting with me at such and such date and time at our office down in Olympia. And I said, no, we don't. It was negotiated specifically that you are not to be involved because of a conflict. And he basically said, F you, you're coming down to meet with us. Right. I'm like, okay. So we had to put on our suits and everything and at least believe that it was legitimate that we were going to go do this. So we were professional. There were three of us that went down there and met with him in this office. And we had a 900 page or so document, binder, appendix, everything that outlined this whole thing with eyewitness accounts. Right. I mean, because my impression is that this could be a tort related issue. There's definitely federal stuff related to this thing because it's government corruption. Right. So we spend about 20 minutes there where this guy, this lead investigator, senior guy, and then this younger guy I'd never seen before. It's like he's being trained on how things really work. These are both FBI agents. And how he sits there and tells us that there's no federal crimes, essentially that these guys didn't do anything. And then we go back and forth and I'm telling him, well, I'm kind of concerned that my house could get set on fire at night. I might get called down some dirt road and shot in the back of the head. And he laughs at me and tells me I'm crazy. And essentially we're back and forth and I'm arguing with him about this stuff. And finally it gets to a point where, I just ask him a question. This is towards the end of the interview. I said, you're the FBI. I said, you guys work with all these law enforcement agencies throughout the country. You take good faith information from all of these agencies. I said, when you have people like me that come forward to inform you that things are not how they're being presented, right? So that there's real issues going on and you have corrupted agencies. I said, how can you engage with these agencies and take good faith information and then act on it? And he looked at me and he smiled and he told me every police agency in the United States is at minimum ethically corrupt. And we gladly take good faith information from all of them.
Well, that explains a lot. So across the board, they're corrupt to a degree. That
Yeah.
that's right. And then we know the Department of Justice protects the FBI. We know how that game goes in DC, and that the FBI really controls the financial levers of the sheriffs, don't they? Right?
Well, sure. Well, how everything works. I think I'll kind of map this out a little bit, how this all works. Okay. People elect a sheriff, right? The
Yep.
sheriff is like the chief law enforcement agent, in any county jurisdiction. He's really the only one that has the authority to take life and property away from people, or to enforce, right? No other agent in a county government really has any authority to do any of those things. They can't take your freedom away. They can't take your property away from you. Yeah, a judge can issue an order, but only the sheriff can serve it. And what I mean by sheriff, and I'm using him as the identity, it's because he is the identity, because people elect a sheriff essentially so they don't have to pack a gun around and enforce their own liberty, right? That's why you elect a sheriff, right? To protect your welfare, right? To make sure that your liberty, your freedom, your individual rights and freedoms are upheld. That is the reason that you elect him. And because of that, the way that everything is set up, all that power to take life and property flows through that elected sheriff's office. So, you know, when you have deputy sheriffs, when you have city police, when you have code enforcement, when you have health officers that enforce, you know, COVID and whatnot, they're
Yep.
deriving all of that authority through the office of the elected sheriff because they don't have that authority on their own. Only he has that authority. Even to collect taxes, really, because that's taking property, that power flows through the elected office of the sheriff.
And the
Right.
sheriff
So
is
when you
not,
have
and the sheriff's not necessarily for the audience, is not necessarily the chief law enforcement officer. He's the CEO, chief executive officer of the county, which is a corporation. Go ahead, Rich.
and the country is set up so the power flows through him. It's a check and balance, right? And
Yep.
so what happens is when you have federal officers, state law enforcement and whatnot, they derive their authority to enforce in that county from that elected sheriff. Right, the power flows through that of the sheriff, through his deputization of them, essentially. Right,
Yep, got
so
it.
he's the one liable and responsible. The sheriff is, right. In order to get this access, because this access is paid for, right? It's not free. It comes in the form of what you would call mutual aid agreements, right? So there's a contract of aid, right? That happens between the sheriff and any other agency that wants to be able to have enforcement powers in that county, be it the FBI, be it the state police, be it US Marshals, be it, you know, Border Patrol, INS, anybody like that, right? If they want to enforce federal, state law, whatever, they have to go through the elected sheriff. They got to get his permission because he's the mafia boss in that county, right? That he's the guy, right? He has all the power. The elected sheriff has more power than the elected president in that county. It's just the way it is. It's the way the country's set up. And it's set up that way so you have stop gaps and protection, levels of protection between the government and the people. So that ultimately the people's personal interests are the highest thing, right? But obviously that's not the way it's happening now.
No, not at all.
So that's kind of the best way that I can explain it, because you know people don't realize or know this. You know, like some states like Oregon, you know, I guess you could say the top law enforcement agent would be like the what do you call it? Not the they don't call them prosecutors; they call them something else,
Well, solicitors.
something like that. Like they're the top prosecuting attorney in the state or the county or whatnot. Well, the way that their constitutions are written, that person is, you know, the top official and they're above the sheriff.
Yep, got it. So every
But
state's
they're
a little
really not
different.
above the sheriff because the sheriff is really the only one that can serve the action, right?
I
He's the
understand.
only one that can serve the action still.
Got it.
So,
And the FBI funds some of the sheriff departments, yes?
well, that comes through the mutual aid agreements, right? So the sheriff agrees to the terms of the mutual aid agreement, which gives him the money from the DOJ and the FBI. And in return, the FBI and the DOJ get the influence and the access of enforcement.
So this is very important for the audience. So we probably all, myself included, you grow up, you live in a small town, you pay your taxes, also pay taxes to the county, and you think the tax money is paying for the sheriffs, and we learned something else. We learned that there's federal money coming in, but not just federal money from like the accounting office, federal money run through the FBI or the Department of Justice. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say that in most counties that about 50% of the operating costs come from the federal government through these, you know, funnels that come through DOJ, DOT.
It's all about the money. Forget all the illegal offshore stuff and those ghost accounts and those monies to further bribe judges and sheriffs around the country. Forget all that. This alone is actually kind of startling. I didn't realize how substantial it is. And yeah, you're right. They obviously push power through the money. So if the money's coming from the federal government, of course, the sheriffs are going to cooperate. This is just amazing.
Well, yeah, because if they don't cooperate, okay, for instance, okay, you have these constitutional sheriffs, right, that claim to be throughout the country.
Yeah.
Right. So if they were to get elected into office and they were to say, you know what, I'm going to be a true constitutional sheriff. I'm going to break all these mutual aid agreements and I'm going to no longer allow for influence from the DOJ or the FBI. I'm going to no longer let the DOJ come in and enforce federal law in this county. They can do that, right? They can do that. But if they do that, then all that money, like half of the operating budget, is going to get pulled away, right? And then they're going to become an enemy of the federal government. And the DOJ and the FBI is going to be all over them. And ultimately, they're going to leverage those county governments because the county governments are going to lose money too. And eventually they're going to get that guy impeached or kicked out of office one way or another, right? That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
But I'll tell you that in order to facilitate this capture that we're under now, it had to be under the system, because if the sheriffs were able to operate properly and independently, none of this stuff could have ever happened, right? Because let me ask you this. When you have an election fraud that occurs in a county, who are the perpetrators of that crime?
So who are the perpetrators of the crime? The obviously the officials that allow it to happen. Well,
they're the ones who facilitated it to happen, right?
Right.
So your county auditor, the yep. election staff, right? Yep.
The attorney general,
these people
right?
Are the ones I mean, allow local, that to happen.
And governors, right? It's you're. I mean, we see this in Georgia as an example for the last 5 years, 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. So the people that are fraudulently registered to vote or the people casting fraudulent ballots.
Yeah.
These people are committing these crimes in this said county, in this jurisdiction that is underneath the selected sheriff. Right. And so when you have reports of election fraud, the only person that has jurisdiction really over them is the elected sheriff in each individual county. It's not a higher authority. It's not a an auditor. It's not what at the state level who oversees elections. Is it the Secretary of State?
I think so.
It's not the Secretary of State at the state level. It's not the state police. It's the county sheriff. He's the one with the jurisdiction because the crime occurred in his jurisdiction, right? These are crimes of fraud, you know, crimes of integrity.
And you filed a criminal complaint before on the election, did you?
I tried.
Well, what happened?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I knew what would happen. And I was setting them up, I guess you could say. I was taking away their plausible deniability. So in the county that I live in, I don't live in Mason County. I live in Jefferson County.
Yep.
It's about 30,000 people here. It's a way far left county.
Yep.
I waited till after the inauguration, and then Judicial Watch put out an investigative report related to, I think, 200 and some counties, 230 some counties around the country that had over 100% voter turnout, right? And it happened to be the county I lived in had, I believe, 111% voter turnout. So Judicial Watch confirmed those numbers with the statistics with the Secretary of State of Washington State. They tried to communicate with Jefferson County. They tried to, I believe, get access to voter rolls and whatnot. They were denied, and Jefferson County maintained that they had a legitimate election. So if you had 111% voter turnout, it means that you are a resident in that county, It means that you are a victim of fraud, right? It means that your election was stolen and that your government's no longer elected in that county. It's an appointed government by whatever other authority, right? It's not elected. It's running under the guise of being elected, but it's not.
It's totally
so I called the sheriff's office to report as a victim of fraud.
So even your little county went through this nonsense.
Sure. And I think they all did, you know.
I'm with you. Look, we got about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show. Next week, you and I are going to cover a big sex scandal out of Washington State, Kiwanis sex abuse scandal of the 1970s.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about go ahead. We'll talk about that next week. But I want to wrap up the next 3 or 4 minutes about law enforcement and, wow, I mean, just the realization we are not as free as we think. There really is no constitutional sheriffs. They're part of corporations. They're meant to be constitutional. They might swear their hand in the Bible, but the reality is they're part of the Babylon Matrix corporation system. County's a corporation, which is in the state of corporation, which is in the federal government corporation, USA Incorporated, which is part of the crown, British Crown, and so on and so forth. Even your little towns and villages, most of them are incorporated in the United States. Go ahead, Rich. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Do you want me to finish telling this real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Okay. So what happened is this. I called the dispatch center. I wanted a case number for a fraud complaint because I was making an allegation that I was a victim of election fraud, right? My freedom was stolen from me.
Yep.
So they gave me a case number and then set up so a deputy would call me back, right? So I ended up getting called back by just a field deputy where I tried to make this report. He said I couldn't make a report because there wasn't any evidence of fraud. So I cited Judicial Watch as an investigative firm. He said they're not an investigative firm. They're a media outlet. You can't use them as evidence. So he said, you have no evidence. There's no evidence of election fraud. Right. And so we go round and round about that. And ultimately, he gets real uncomfortable and nervous and has to make an excuse to get off the phone with me because he can't answer my questions or satisfy me. Because the thing is they can't they can't actually let me file a report. They can't let me write a statement because as soon as I do that, it requires action on their part.
Right. Action or part and being part of the public record. He can deny ever having a phone call with you. But if it's actually paper trail inside your county, wow, that's a big deal, right?
Well, they have to do something. If I make a statement as a victim of fraud, right, they have to actually take investigative steps, right? So then they would actually have to engage in a cover-up, right? So what they decide instead is ultimately they just obstruct, right? They just push you away and not take the complaint.
So
that way they're not...
Here's election interference in a very subtle way, but it's still election interference in my opinion.
It is. Well, I mean, it's maintaining a captured government is what it is, right? They're facilitating a captured government by obstructing justice.
Wow.
Right? Because that's the only place you can go to file a complaint, right? Really is your elected sheriff. That's where you have to go to file an election fraud complaint.
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap this up. So you were in law enforcement up to about what, 15 years ago or 12 years ago. And then you
2011, 12.
Right. And then you said that enough's enough, right? And you went out and did other things, including Sasquatch research, which is phenomenal, and whatever else. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks, but we're going to get into the sex scandal next week because, you know, what's going on in the world is now that they're the white hats and the police finally and the sheriffs, at least some sheriffs in Florida, are breaking up these sex trafficking rings in Disney and other places, and you're starting to read headlines about it. It wasn't the Sound of Freedom that brought this out. This was already happening. But Sound of Freedom brought it into the public consciousness. And now people can open their eyes and start reading different reports that are even mainstream media is almost kind of forced to cover. You're seeing different, people like being arrested, like famous people or working for organizations forced to resign. All this is related to pedophilia to a great degree.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is, you know, and like I said, you know, what I kind of laid out the map I showed you now, I think if people realize why that they had to get rid of Joe Arpaio, why it was totally necessary to take him out when they took him out in 2018.
Why did they take him out? Go ahead.
Well, look at his record. I mean, look who he was. Do you think that he would have allowed the election fraud to go down in Maricopa County, how it went down?
Hell no.
No.
right? And so, yeah, there are some real good sheriffs in the country. I'm not picking on all of them, obviously.
No,
And same thing with FBI agents, not picking on FBI or even Department of Justice. But we lived in a system which is unfortunately amoral to a great degree, unethical to a great degree, certainly corrupt in places. And we need, we the people need to bring the Constitution back, right? You need to bring the common law back and get rid of the Bar Association. There are a lot of problems with the Bar Association, right? We have to really do everything possible to get our country back and get our freedoms back and actually live like we should have with the founding fathers. Their dream, their vision, their understanding. It still applies today. Rich, you got a minute to close out. Go ahead.
Like you said, I mean, the structure has been set up to basically hijack your own authority and your own liberty and your own freedom, right? It basically takes it away from you and it puts it in an administrative system of control, right? Because the sheriff is a huge issue because the people don't really realize or know that that sheriff is. He's the only one we elect as a law enforcement agent, right? There's a reason why that the people elect him. It's because the people are handing over their own authority and putting it in his safekeeping so that he can use it for the people's advantage, for their welfare,
Yep.
right? For their interests. That is the only reason that you elect a sheriff. It's not, you don't elect a sheriff so he can administrate, policy on you. That's not why you elect him, but that's what is going on.
That's exactly what's going on. Rich, thank you very much for your time today. I look forward to seeing you next week. We're going to get into the ugly underbelly of the globe. Like you think all this child trafficking, child sacrifice was ancient history in the Old Testament. Well, it's not, people. It's been around much too long, has been in the shadows, has been hidden, has been underground. We're going to bring out another angle of it from your understanding where you grew up out in Washington. Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you.